For those of you who have been frustrated by the lack of continuity or accuracy in the speaking program, here's the official answer. For those of you with wireless modems, you're in luck. It's posted on the website and also on the BBS when they get it up and running. So that's the place to get the most accurate information. The other thing is that it will be posted on Sheets tomorrow, and we will try to get those distributed to people so that when you ask where something is, they might actually be able to answer tomorrow. So let's see. That's that. We have a couple of things we need to give away here. I'm sure for those of you who didn't know, this is the John Q. Newman talk. So we are going to do John Q. Newman trivia. And I've got somebody want to recommend a judge for me? Okay, we'll use John as the judge. First thing we're going to give away is a serial switch box. Behind door number one, yeah. So this is going to be an easy question. This is going to be done by hands. Whoever I happen to see raise their hand first will get the first shot at it, or if I know you. So the first question is, what was the latest book published by John?
All right.
So it's the ID Master. The ID Master. So, by the way, available for sale in the gift shop.
Buy lots of.
Right. Okay. So, come on up, and you're going to have to come here because this ain't wireless. I'm sure you will get many hours of use out of that. All right, now we got a little more exciting gift for you, a Spark 10. There's more computing power in here, but I got a Spark 10. So this is going to be a little bit tougher of a question. What was the very first book that John ever published? Heavy Duty New Identity is not the answer. Anybody else want to try? Everybody flipping through? Say again?
No. Can I give him a clue?
Okay.
What's the name of the singer who just did the thing, who did Born in the USA?
Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen. There's a big clue.
Not from New Jersey.
Here, you point him out. You got it. You got it. You have excellent literary taste, my man. Reborn in the USA.
All right. So anyway, John is a man who needs no introduction. He is going to be talking about privacy in a post 9/11 world.
Hi, it's good to be back. You know, I wasn't here last year. Everything, medical problems kept me away, but it's good to be back to DEF CON 10. And I have to say, it's really a professional job now. I'm amazed. It's really coming its own. You guys deserve the credit, because without you guys, this wouldn't be here. So let's have a hand for yourselves, eh? Now, as you guys know, I always start off telling you that what I know about computers, you could fit right in here. Okay, so my talk isn't about the computers and software and all that stuff. My talk is about usually the use, abuse, and misuse of computerized information. And of course, after September 11th, we now face a whole new challenge on the whole concept of privacy and the freedom of speech in our society. We are this close to becoming a society where lawful political dissent, lawful speech, and the exchange of unpopular radical ideas in and of themselves could subject a person to monitoring and surveillance by the government, or in the worst case, even being arrested. Yeah, Grant said it's too late, it's already being done, and to a certain extent this is true. My point is to lay out what the argument is the government makes and some of the things that they're doing that you might not be aware of. I often have a saying that I like to say. In America, we are still the freest society in the world. No question about that. But we are also the most monitored and tracked society in the world. This seems to be a dichotomy, and it is, but it's true. What I'm going to reveal to you today is some of the ways that your movements, which you do, are tracked and recorded that you might not be so well aware of. I'm also going to talk about the new things that the government wants to be able to do without your consent. The first thing is that this whole debate, listen, what happened September 11th, no question, was horrific, and it was a singular event. It can't be understated. The problem is we are trying to buy security in our society at the cost of privacy rights, at the cost of civil liberties, and at the cost of freedom of speech. Let's talk about freedom of speech first, an issue very dear to my heart, as you well know. People who would say, okay, yeah, we should have freedom of speech, but we shouldn't allow people to write books on bomb making, poisoning. Kid can go on the internet and find out how to make a bomb and blow up his school, or books on new identity, or just unpopular lifestyles. They say, we just want to outlaw that type of speech, but we'll allow everything else. Well, here's the problem with that. First of all, who is going to decide for you what you should be able to read, to see in a movie, watch at home at television, or exchange ideas about in a forum? Who do you want to appoint to do that for you? Who do you want to be your censor? Maybe I should be it. Hey, I'll let everything through. But the problem is you might have a censor who's not as open-minded, shall we say, as I am. That's one problem. The second problem is once you start doing that, because I'm a black guy, obviously, right? I could say, okay, I want the neo-Nazis shut down, I want the Klan shut down, and the anti-Semites shut down, right? No, that's okay, that's all I want. So the Klan can't march in public anymore, the neo-Nazi websites have to go dark, they can't publish their hate literature, all that. That's all I want done. But then somebody else might say, well, wait a minute. You're writing all these books on new identity and identity theft and privacy, whatever. So, no, this now becomes a banned book. Guess what? In Australia, if this isn't on their banned book list yet, it soon will be. Most of my titles are banned in Australia under one of their laws that prohibits the importation or sale of books that pose a threat to the order of society. In fact, there is a court case pending against a bookstore owner there who sold many of my titles and many others. Australia is a democracy. Australians look like us. They may talk funny, but they look like us. See? So here's the problem. If you think that totalitarianism can only start in countries in the Middle East or South Asia or South America, you're wrong. Totalitarianism can start with the suppression of ideas in countries like our own. And this is a point that is lost. So the problem is, if you say, the only thing I want to ban on the internet is kiddie porn, this is frequently an argument that is used by the government. Well, first of all, kiddie porn is already illegal. You don't have to do anything more to make kiddie porn illegal. It has always been illegal to exploit children sexually because they're not adults. They cannot legally give their consent to these activities. So it has always been illegal to buy kiddie porn, to mail kiddie porn, to download it over the internet. It always has been. So this is a straw horse to allow people who want to regulate what you can see to start regulating more things. So because in reality what these people is that, look, there's a lot of weird sex stuff on the internet, let's face it. So it's not that they just want to get rid of kiddie porn. What they want to do is basically get rid of anything that's on the internet that doesn't fit their sexual mores. Now, I'm not defending these sites. But what I'm saying is, who is going to make that determination? Do you want John Ashcroft to decide what websites you can access? I know I sure as hell don't. You know? Do you want W to decide? You know? I mean, well, look, if it's Bill Clinton calling it, okay. All right? You know? So, this is, you see, the problem is, the way they sell it to you is they say, but we have to do this to protect our children. So a guy like me who stands up and says, wait a minute, let's look at the real issue. Immediately, we are categorized as, well, you must be wanting to defend child pornographers and whatever. Not at all. But you see, we live in a soundbite society. And let me go to a good example I like to use. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. Look, I voted for Clinton. I wish I hadn't, but that doesn't matter. The fact is, Bush won the election in 2000 on that second debate, to paraphrase him, when they were talking about the tax cut. You know, the one that's put us in the red again? And what did he say? He said, the difference between me and my opponent is, I say it's your money. You should take that money and you decide what to do with it. But he says he'll decide for you what he'll do with your money. In that 60 seconds, he had won the election because Joe and John and Jane Doe at home across the country were like, yeah, that's our money. Yeah, I want that money. Yeah, why should he tell us what he's going to do with our money? The point is, it was a vast oversimplification of an issue. The surpluses were based on projections, best case projections. And of course, what happened? 12 months later, less than 12 months later, September 11th happened, and we've spent about $150 billion so far on the war on terrorism, and the end isn't in sight. And so this year, we'll have a budget deficit of between $100 and $200 billion, depending how bad the economy is. The point is, by couching the issue in that soundbite, even though it was a vast oversimplification, an election was won. People, I might have agreed to something that had they been presented with more facts, they might have said, yeah, we'll have a tax cut, but it'll be a little bit smaller. It's the same thing here with the issue of national security versus privacy versus freedom of speech. They will say to you, okay, we should make it so that all people coming into this country from certain countries have to be fingerprinted and photographed. And then the thing is, because we know that terrorists come from these countries, and by doing this, then we increase our security. That sounds good, because it's not going to affect most Americans. It's just going to affect people from these countries. Well, that's where it starts, but who knows? Well, why won't this work? Number one, what if I was born in Saudi Arabia, became a German or a British citizen or a Canadian citizen? Then I'm not going to be photographed and fingerprinted. Remember the guy who tried to cross the border from Vancouver and around in December of 1999 with all those explosives he was going to blow up at LAX? Was living in Canada under an assumed Canadian identity. He showed a Canadian passport, a real Canadian passport, to cross the border. It's only because the customs officer was suspicious that he was detected. It's quite possible, had we had in this new system of fingerprinting and photographing, he would have gotten through, because he would have come to the border. They would have said, oh, you have to go in here and be fingerprinted and photographed. His name wouldn't have come up on any watch list, and they would have photographed and fingerprinted him, and he would have been passed through customs, and then we would have had something happen before 9/11. In the reality, what the government will do is they will get fingerprints and photographs from millions of people in databases who haven't done anything wrong. And this is the type of choice that we're being asked to make. Let me bring up another example of national security against civil liberties. That just applied to people who aren't citizens. So if you're a homegrown American, you could say, well, I don't care about that because I carry the blue passport and I don't have to worry about that crap. But let's talk about what happened to the Japanese Americans in 1945. You're like, oh, come on, John Q. That's old hat. Half of us weren't even born, or 90% of us weren't even born back then. Yeah, you're right. And you might be laboring under the misguided notion that the courts found the internment of those people, most of whom were American citizens, to be illegal. In fact, the court did not. Let's just review this. The executive branch, the Defense Department, said to Roosevelt that there was widespread evidence of treason by Japanese permanent residents and, most importantly, by Japanese Americans. So let's get this straight. Those people were as much a citizen of this country as you or I are. They were Japanese Americans, most of them born in this country. So let's make that point clear. But the executive said, oh, these people, there's widespread collusion with the enemy. There never was any proof of widespread collusion with the Empire of Japan by Japanese Americans. Never any proof. There were isolated instances, just like I'm sure there were some German Americans and Italian Americans who assisted Hitler and Mussolini. But you didn't see Roosevelt saying, well, let's lock up all the Germans and the Italians. Hell, who'd be left in the country? You know? Then black people would have been running the country, I guess. I don't know. You know? Huh? Huh? They didn't put all the Italian Americans in camp. There'd been nobody around the country. New York would be empty. But the point is, the Supreme Court ruled in 1945 that what the executive branch had done was constitutional. Now let's fast forward to 2002. George Bush wants to say, if W or one of his henchmen says that you are an illegal combatant, that you can be picked up by the MPs, taken to the nearest military brig, and interned there until the hostilities are over, with no access to counsel, no access to a hearing to determine if, in fact, you are an illegal combatant. Now, doesn't that sound strangely like what was done back in the 40s? So, let's say something else would happen. Another plane has crashed into a building. And let's say there's some Arabs and Arab Americans who helped do it. If George Bush said, I am signing an executive order tomorrow ordering the internment of all Arab Americans, there is no basis to really challenge that, because the Supreme Court has ruled that the internment of the Japanese, we were at war. The president has said we are at war. The president alleges that there is a real and present danger to the country by widespread collusion of these people with the enemy. George Bush could allege that there is a clear and present danger to this country because there is widespread collusion of Arab Americans with the enemy. The legal standard would be met, and it's highly unlikely that the Supreme Court would overturn its previous precedent, especially in light of judges like Rehnquist and Scalia, who generally believe in deferring to the executive. This is dangerous, because you can say, well, they're never going to declare me an illegal combatant, but you never know. What if your wife is Arab American? Or what if, I don't know, what if people from Somalia or from Kenya or from the Sudan who are black start committing terrorists? Then maybe I become an illegal combatant. So the problem is, this is a dangerous slope. If the president is to be given the power to declare somebody an illegal combatant, then there must be a process by which, before a person can be placed in that status and his rights removed, that he has a hearing before a judge to determine, and the proof of this, the burden of proof, should be the same as in a criminal trial, beyond a reasonable doubt, not simply probable cause. We now lock people up for simple immigration violations for between 6 months and a year. You see, what the government has done is they've said, okay, we will take the laws and now we will abuse them to make them fit our purposes. They know somebody who's overstayed a visitor's visa, he's not a terrorist, but he happens to be from a country now that's suspect. So instead of simply renewing his visa, which frequently was done before, or allowing the person to leave without the mark of deportation, now they are held sometimes for 6 months to a year with limited access to counsel, and then they're deported. This is wrong. America was founded on the fact we are a democracy. In a democracy, what does that mean? A democracy means that we have a free exchange of ideas. It means I can get up here and talk about things that are illegal to do, but we can still talk about them. Let me explain to you. People are saying, well, yeah, but you know what, John, you're just talking about books and crap like this. Well, what would we say if, what if I said, you know what, there's 30,000 murders a year in this country. I think it's actually more. Too many people are getting killed. So what we need to do is we need to stop depictions of violence in the media. So we're going to have a law that outlaws the explicit violence or explicit instructions in any type of media on how to commit violence. Well, we're not just talking about crazy programs you're going to say goodbye to. No More Murder, She Wrote, even if it is in reruns. I think they had a two-hour special on a few weeks ago. Because in Murder, She Wrote, what do? I love using this show as a perfect example because Jessica Fletcher is as white bread as they come, okay? And rarely do we see anybody on that show that ain't Caucasian. But it's okay, so I'm talking to the majority here, okay? Now, what does Jessica Fletcher show us each week? We see how to kill somebody in great detail with poisons, errant shotguns, knives, you name it. Jessica shows how to do it. Then, most importantly, we show how to throw suspicion onto somebody else. Because you know, if you watch Murder, She Wrote, and I used to be, it was one of my guilty pleasures, they always arrest the wrong guy. Because the murderer has made that guy look guilty. Okay? Then, of course, at the end, the real guy gets caught. So, Murder, She Wrote, every week on network television, CBS, right after 60 Minutes at 8 p.m. See, I still remember. We're going to show 20 million people how to rub out somebody you don't like. Now, let's talk about movies. Do you go to a movie to watch the Beaver Cleaver family? No. When you go to a movie or pick up a novel or watch a drama on TV, you want to see conflict, violence, conflict, and that kind of stuff. That's what you want to see. You don't want to see, oh, hi, dear, how are you doing this morning? Oh, those eggs are wonderful. Oh, aren't the kids just perfect? No, you want to hear about, oh, hi, dear, well, Beaver got arrested again, you know, and Wally killed the manager at the supermarket. That's what you want to see on TV, okay? And anybody who denies it is lying, okay? You know it. So the point is, most movies start out with some heinously illegal act. If it's James Bond movie, it's somebody getting killed, some kind of espionage, Road to Perdition, the movie that'll probably get an Oscar with Tom Hanks. What was he in that movie? He's a hitman. When the movie opens, we see the graphic murder. We see a criminal enterprise. And we see the people living well from this criminal enterprise. So the point is, when you start saying we have to close down avenues of expression or inquiry, then before you know it, we could be a country like Saudi Arabia, where there are no movie theaters, where what appears on television is very limited. You see, privacy rights, civil liberties are lost in increments. You don't lose them all at once. In other words, if I come and say to you, okay, let me give you an example. I'm going to make it a law that your Social Security number is a public record. You will get a form from the government tomorrow that you must fill out, and then this form will be posted on a website that anybody can view. Most of you people in here would say, John Q. Newman, you know where you can go. But that's already happened. Because the first George Bush in 1990 took the privacy restrictions off of your credit report. But most of you don't realize that. A credit report is in three parts. Whoops, there we go, three parts. The top part is called the header. The header data is your name, your birth date, your current address, two previous addresses, your Social Security number, your name of your employer, and your home phone. The second part of your credit report is the actual credit history, the names of the accounts, the account numbers, the balances, and your payment history. The last part is the public record information. Have you been sued? Do you have judgment? Stuff like that. The first George Bush in 1990, after behest at the credit industry, the credit bureau industry, took the privacy protection off of all of your credit report with the exception of the payment history. For $30, if I have your name and address, I can go online and legally buy your Social Security number, your address, your name, your birth date, and your two previous addresses. Now, in an instant, that means everybody in this room who's an American citizen with an SS number, your SS number is now public record data. Think about that next time you use that as a password on a bank account. Anybody can get that information, and identity thieves frequently do. So the point of it is, your privacy was lost. Why was it lost? Because corporations decided they could make money by selling your private information, very private information, Social Security numbers. And so now the result of that is your SS number is public. It is not private. It is a public record document that almost anyone can get very easily. Now that should make you very uncomfortable because, of course, in our society, the Social Security number has become the de facto national identifier. With just an SS number, I can access in a matter of minutes or hours almost all records on anybody in this room and do it basically legally. I don't have to break any laws to do it. So the point of it is that we can lose all of our privacy rights in the name of national security. To give you another example, if you earn your money legally and you pay taxes on it, how you spend your money and what you do with it, as far as I'm concerned, is no business of anybody else's. Would you agree with that? Okay. The U.S. government doesn't think so. Now, I'm getting at a bigger issue here. And the bigger issue, and I'll go into this a little bit more in detail, but the bigger issue is here is, our everyday activities as Americans are being tracked and used to create dossiers and databases. Just things we have to do to live every day. For example, let's go back to the financial thing. There's a little known government agency called FinCEN. They're based in Detroit. That stands for the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN. What FinCEN's job to do is to detect people who might have income they shouldn't, to detect money launderers like drug dealers, stuff like that. Now, when you put it in that perspective, it sounds okay. It's like, hey, well, they're just after people like the late Pablo Escobar or, you know, people like that. They're not after little folks like you and me. Well, let's talk about what can really happen with FinCEN. The first thing is with FinCEN, if you make a transaction at your bank that the bank feels is suspicious, by law, they have to fill out what's called a suspicious activity report, an SAR. Now you're saying, what's suspicious? I come in with a duffel bag with $10 million in it, and there's blood stains on it? No. No. And there's like a white powdery residue in the bag too? No. A suspicious activity could be, I have a small account at a bank and all of a sudden I come in and deposit $4,000 in cash. Or my bank account habits change all of a sudden. Or all of a sudden my account has a small balance and all of a sudden I sell a book for a big 100 grand, now I got 100 grand in there. The law is the bank must fill out the SAR, because if they don't fill it out and you are doing something illegal, the bank can be made financially liable. So what does that mean the bank does? The bank says, hey, they tell their tellers, if you think anything is amiss, you let us know, we'll fill the report out, because then that way, you know, we don't have anything to worry about. Now, these reports go to FinCEN. FinCEN is part of the Department of the Treasury. What happens when they get to FinCEN? Well, the number of things can happen. They can start investigating you. By law, you cannot be told of this report for a number of weeks after it's been filed. So you have no idea. So a report at FinCEN can mean they could embargo your bank account. It could mean that IRS people go to the bank and get detailed copies of your banking records. It can cause you to have a tax audit. The worst thing of it is the report goes onto a secure, we all know what that means, website. that can be accessed by other police departments all over the country. This is your financial information. Now, what kind of things can get you into FinCEN? Well, if you go buy more than $3,000 worth of money orders, if you win big at the casino, or you buy over a certain amount of chips with cash. All sorts of things can get you into FinCEN. But the worst one is just the suspicion that maybe what you're doing is a suspicious activity. Who's making this determination? A teller? A bank manager? But based on that, boom, your name and personal account information now are in a database run by the Treasury Department in Detroit. Doesn't this sound a lot like George Bush's program of, hey, we're going to enlist the postman, the meter man, the milkman, all to be keeping an eye out there for suspicious activity? You know, John Q. Newman got 10 letters from people all over the country today because, you know, frequently my readers write me. Maybe that's suspicious. Maybe we need to drop a dime. Hey, guess what? You know, I mean, so then we become a society where Big Brother is every place. Now, I talked to you about FinCEN. That's one way. Let's talk about alimony and child support. You're like, well, what the hell does that have to do with anything John Key's talking about today? Oh, it's got a lot to do with all of us, even if you're 75, even if you're 15, and don't have any kids. There's something called the National New Hire Database. Bet you didn't know about that, did you? You got to buy more of my books, folks. Okay? What's the National New Hire Database? How did it come to being? Well, at any given time, there's about 250,000 people in the United States who are seriously delinquent on child support and alimony. Understand, I'm not defending these people. If you got kids, you know what? If you had fun in the sack, you got to pay for what you done. You know? No question about it. So I'm not defending people who don't pay their child support. Not doing it at all. But here's the problem. They said, we got to get these people. How can we stop these children from not getting the milk and the diapers that they need? See, this is how it's sold to us. Listen to me and remember this the next time a politician is on TV telling you you need to support another bill that's going to take away some more of your privacy because we got to do this for the children. It's only for the children. Are you against children getting what they need, John Q? Are you? You know? Okay. So they came up with an idea. They said, you know what? Anybody on child support, people who owe child support, they got to work, right? Because they got to earn money. And they got to have bank accounts to keep that money in. So if we can find the names and addresses and SS numbers of everybody who's working. And then we can get the bank account numbers of everybody who's got a bank account. We'll catch them because we'll catch them at work. And if we don't catch them at work, we'll catch them when they put the check in the bank. Guess what? I have no children. But my bank account information, just like that of everybody else in this room who has a bank account in the United States, every year, your bank account data is screened. The banks can do it one of two ways. They can hire people and install the software that screens the accounts for them. And basically the screening is they get a master list of people who are child support scofflaws, and they match those names, those social security numbers, birth dates, and other data against that of their account holders. When they get a match, that match is reported to that state's Department of Child Services, and by law, you can't be told about it for 2 weeks. That's to give them time to get that lien and freeze your money. That's one thing. So, understand, all of your bank accounts in here are being screened this way. But if you bank at a smaller bank or a small credit union, they don't want to go to the expense of buying the software and training people to do this. So a second way they can do it is simply give their bank account data over to that state's Department of Child Services every year. And they'll screen it for you. Isn't that nice? So, all of your bank account information, even if you don't have children, is now being screened to see if you owe child support. Now, you can say this is for a good cause, and I give them that. But the problem is, this is the challenge of a democracy. In a democracy, some guilty people, O.J. Simpson, go free because we can't convict innocent people. Okay? That's the challenge of a democracy. A democracy, listen, if we take away everybody's privacy, there will be no unpaid child support. But then we won't live in a democracy anymore. So you see, this is the challenge on this. So even if you are a 70-year-old woman who doesn't have any kids that need to be supported, your bank account data is being screened. If you are a 15-year-old kid who, God forbid, shouldn't have any kids yet, your bank account data is being screened. Now let's go back to the National New Hire Database, the other part of this. When people are hired now, there's a form the employer fills out. It varies by state by state. The federal government sets the minimum information. The minimum data is name, social security number, birth date, and address. Most states require more information, like date of birth, driver's license number, other stuff, which the employer gets off of the I-9 that you fill out when you take a job. That information is then sent to the state's child welfare or child services division, and then your name is run against their state database of child support scofflaws for a match. That same information is then forwarded to the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement, and they do the same thing. So if you have a tax refund coming, that's how they are able to intercept it. If you have any kind of federal payments coming, that's how it's intercepted. Most people have no idea about these databases, and we are the only industrialized democracy that does this. That's why I say to you, yeah, we're free, but we are more monitored than people in any other democracy. It's ridiculous. It is crazy. And this bill was passed because they couched it in terms of it's for the children. So my message for you today is to understand that you will be asked to sign off on many things now in the name of national security. But the question that we have to ask is that, will national security come at the very cost of what we say we are trying to protect? What America about is conventions like this. It's not about the Elks Club. It's about conventions like this. It's about iconoclastic people with different ideas who are willing to challenge the status quo. That is what has been a hallmark of our country from the beginning. These things are now threatened because if you disagree with the government line, that could now subject you to surveillance. I'm not saying, okay, hacking, breaking into somebody else's computer, that's illegal. It always has been. But the problem is, can you come under surveillance just because you write about hacking or become a hacking expert even though you don't break the law? This is where we are dangerously close to where lawful political discourse and lawful discourse in general and ideas will subject you to surveillance. And the problem is, once we have the court system, we can no longer depend on to act as a bulwark. Back in the 40s and the 50s, when we still had segregation in the United States, you had many state laws that required schools be segregated. Black people were paid less. This is all old history. So the only avenue that black people had was to go to the federal courts. And the federal courts, Brown versus Board of Education in 1950 said, anyone who lives in a neighborhood is entitled to go to that school. All sorts of other laws that were passed. If it hadn't been for the Supreme Court, it is possible that you would have had segregation in this country in some fashion well into the 70s. Because the courts now, especially the Supreme Court, has a conservative majority. And if Bush is able to appoint more justices in the line of Scalia or Winquist, then the ability for excesses of government to be checked go down because many of these judges feel the executive basically should have unchecked power. What I am saying is 9/11 has created a new reality, no question about it. And there are things that have to be changed. But the problem is, we are going so far in directions where we hold people without trial, hold people without being able to see a lawyer. People start being monitored for no reason, wiretaps without an individual warrant, not even to mention the things that the National Security Agency does with Echelon on listening to calls. Did you ever think about this? It's illegal for you to open somebody else's mail and read it, even if you reseal it and put it back in their mailbox. Why shouldn't it be illegal for the government to listen to your telephone calls unless they have an individualized warrant of suspicion? Just because it's a different technology doesn't mean that the laws of privacy should not apply. So in closing, I guess what I want to say is that this year I have a warning. We are entering uncharted territory now. We are about to become a society that is much different than it has been, where at some point groups like this might not be able to meet anymore. And I'm not overstating the issue. If you look at the things that are being proposed, one high executive with the Department of Homeland Security, they were talking about the fact that, well, when people go through customs now, the customs officer can't access your tax return and other stuff. But he said, guess what? In a few years, we'll be able to do that. Because wouldn't that be a smart thing? For example, in Germany, before you can get a passport, the German government checks to make sure that you're not delinquent on your taxes. If you are, they may not give you a passport. Now, Germany is a democracy. So my point is that the freedoms that we have come to know and enjoy are in peril right now. And so what I'm asking you to do as people is to think carefully when somebody proposes a way to improve your security that will remove liberties to do so. You see, isn't it interesting? Republicans say they believe in limited government, which is generally true, and I tend to agree with them. But they don't believe in limited government when it comes to civil liberties and when it comes to privacy. Then they believe in big government. Then they believe in letting private companies rape your privacy in the name of profit. On the other hand, Democrats, I have some for both, who normally were big supporters of civil liberties, frequently will embrace privacy-destroying things if they feel it has a useful end, like the National New Hire Database, and like scanning all of your bank records to check if you owe child support. So the thing what I'm saying to you as informed, intelligent people is ask yourself, is this something that must be done? Don't just say it's to fight terrorism, because in the name of national security throughout the ages, all sorts of crazy things have been done. Well, that's all I've got. If you got any questions, I'd be more than happy to take them.